Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Law is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Law with Denise Howell, episode 141 for December 16th, 2011. Bieber's going down. This episode of This Week in Law is brought to you by Ford, featuring available voice-activated Sync. Sync gives you versatile access to music, podcasts, and more from just about any device. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hi there, it's Denise Howell, and you've tuned in for This Week in Law. We've got a terrific panel with us to discuss everything interesting in the world of technology and law that's been going on this week and going on for the last several weeks, actually, in many of our topics today. Joining us once again is Marty Schwimmer from Leeson & Ellis. Hello, Marty.
Hey, Denise, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming back on the show. It's great to see you, too. And joining us once again, too, is Carolyn Wright, the photo attorney. Hello, Carolyn.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Really wonderful you could join us again. And here with us once again is Evan Brown from Henshaw & Culbertson in Chicago.
Hello there. It's been a while. Good to see you, Denise.
I know. Great to see you too. We're joking because we are recording some back-to-back shows here for the holidays. So I just said goodbye to Evan about 5 minutes ago and we're starting a new show. But it is a new show and we've got a whole bunch of new and interesting topics to delve into. One that I think we should get right into it because folks are pretty interested, I think, to know that Marty actually asked me when I pinged him about being on the show today, if we could talk about SOPA and if he could take the perspective of perhaps this legislation isn't as bad or dangerous as we all have been led to believe and as we've discussed at some length on the show. So I do want to talk about SOPA and get Marty's take on it. There are some trademark provisions that don't get talked about much. And Marty, being a trademark lawyer, can bring us up to speed there and overall give us his take on the proposed bill and let us know why you think this thing is not so bad, Marty.
Well, you know, it's a 70-page bill, so it's kind of hard to summarize it. I was actually just almost being facetious when I said I will only go on the show if I'm allowed to defend it. And I noticed in your pre-show stream, one person immediately asked, he wants to defend SOPA. Is he insane? So that is the level of the rhetoric that's going out there. And I'm a little bit more, you know, disappointed in the debate about this bill because from my perspective, there is a problem. And you should know that I'm a trademark lawyer and I represent United States trademark holders. And I'm involved in a litigation right now where a client came out with a spanking brand new e-commerce website in September. And within 2 weeks, someone in China put up a website that was a pixel for pixel replica of their client's site. And it just sells counterfeits. It doesn't, there's none of this faux replica or that this is not a $20 Rolex situation where everyone knows what they're getting into. This is an attempt to just lie to people and defraud them, right? And everyone who's making the pens is not in the United States. They're likely in China, although
it's
you can't trust.
Company?
It might be.
You just said making the pens.
Oh, well. Yes. And, you know, you can't tell who anybody is because who is for domain names is not reliable. And they are enabled by what are called high-risk merchant banks. And the only way that people can find these things in the United States is through search engines. And, I mean, things have changed. When I was a kid and I wanted to buy counterfeit goods, I had to go to dangerous neighborhoods and deal in cash with shady people who bought counterfeits in, you know, from container ships. So there were two choke points for the brand owner to police. They could get customs to try to intercept the container ship, which sometimes happened, or the police could do raids in, like, in the New York City area, the Fordham Road part of town or Chinatown. Nowadays, people like my wife come across counterfeit soccer shirts by mistake. And it was a funny night. That night I came home and my wife said, you know, this Arsenal shirt that I bought for Matthew, why is it late? And we got a tracking number and I see that it had come from China. So counterfeiters in China can sell counterfeits into the United States in shipments of one unit. So customs cannot stop it whatsoever. And no one has to deal with the danger of buying counterfeits at all. No one goes to the dangerous part of town with cash any longer. So just as e-commerce has enabled lawful vendors, it has really enabled unlawful vendors. So from my point of view, we need tools to be able to police this. So the idea of having more remedies against the intermediaries, the credit card processors, search engines, ISPs, web hostings, domain name registrars, it's at least a plausible idea. So my disappointment with the debate around SOPA was that it was mostly, as far as the rhetoric on the internet goes, it was mostly one-sided, where to them, the sample case is somebody doesn't like a website and they're going to take them down. In other words, it's only dedicated against Egyptian bloggers and Iranian bloggers, and it's only a First Amendment issue. And I don't dispute that countries like Egypt and China have utilized filtering technologies to suppress speech. My view is that there's a legitimate problem for American vendors, and we need better tools. So if a remedy is requested in the bill and someone says, hey, listen, it's going to capture too many people, all right, let's have that discussion and let's tighten up the definitions. I sent Denise earlier in the day a clip. Colbert did two segments on SOPA last night, and hopefully in the show notes we'll be able to distribute those videos, and they're very funny. And he interviews Professor Zittrain from Harvard, who says, well, under this bill, you can send Justin Bieber to prison because he used to go on YouTube and he would cover other people's songs. And that's just, I mean, it's funny. And he got a lot of laughs about the idea of sending Justin Bieber to prison. But I think, unfortunately, it's somewhat disingenuous comment in about talking about legislation that's needed. In other words, is it really probable that someone's going to try to send Justin Bieber to prison for singing a cover song on YouTube? Is it a likely outcome? And if it is captured under the definition, then tighten up the definition. So that's at least my initial view on this, that there is a need.
Don't you think they've had a lot of time to tighten up those definitions at this point? I mean, we're talking about a bill that's been attacked from lots of different people at this point, many chefs, as we've talked about before on the show. And, you know, I mean, I think that folks were promised a bill that would address the overbreadth, and it really hasn't. I think that's why you see this fervor in the rhetoric. Yes, the counterfeit remedies may not be extensive enough, but is there a reason that we need to throw such a large blanket over activity on the internet under this bill? You really think that, you know, at this point, they're going to tighten up the definitions as you would like to see happen? I think they've had ample opportunity.
Well, my understanding is that because there's certainly a hold on Protect IP, on the Senate version, Protect IP, and Senator Wyden of Oregon put a hold on it, that should have led to some form of important compromise. If both sides are so far apart because they're basically, you know, you know, Colbert had a music producer, and he's saying the other thing. We're all going out of business because of music piracy. So if both sides are doing extremist positions, I don't know, maybe this is like the way Democrats and Republicans deal with the budget these days in presidential mm-hmm. politics. Maybe the problem is that everyone thinks that this is about extremism and winning rather than compromise and creating something good. I can't explain why there hasn't been more productive negotiation. I'm saying, as someone whose clients need something like this, we're very disappointed that the process seems to be extremism. I mean, I can't defend things such as that the hearing for SOPA was one-sided with regards to the industry representatives who spoke. I mean, right. It's unfortunate, and it gives the other side a justified feeling that they're being trampled upon. But having said that, again, all of the fact patterns in the media about this bill, they say, oh, if the AG doesn't like a site, then he can take it down. And that's just what they do in China and Egypt. Well, that's nonsense. For an AG to get to shut down a site, he has to get a judge to agree that he's met the standards of the law. It's not about someone who doesn't like speech and wants to suppress it. No one's saying that we don't have a judicial process. So the rhetoric is too extreme. And as a result, something that we need, there's no legislation on the horizon now if this is going to be blocked.
Yeah, my concern about the bill is that we do have a judicial process and it's already there. And this is putting such shortcuts into the enforcement process that we already have, you know, and I just don't know that they're all warranted. You're talking about the Colbert clips. Were we to air those on the show, we would run the risk of getting pulled down from YouTube, you know, and that's all well and good. But I'd rather live in that world than a world where you go to twitch.com and it's not there anymore because somebody has met, you know, Viacom has met some expedited rubber stamp kind of process of saying, hey, you know, they've got our copyrighted works and they're profiting from them. You know, the fair use analysis goes out the window and we're just gone. You know, I'm not comfortable with that world.
Well, the Colbert show provided embed code, so there's something like an implied license for that.
Evan, any thoughts on this? We've talked about SOPA quite a bit on the show, but never had someone as brave as Marty to come in and say, well, actually, you've done a good job of saying, hey, you know, we need to dial down the rhetoric and not be extreme. And I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, we haven't revisited this for a couple of weeks now. Has your thinking on the bill changed at all?
No, it hasn't changed any. And I wish that I could have spoken about SOPA and, for that matter, Protect IP as artfully as what Marty has in this situation, because I see the most unfortunate thing about this being the divisiveness that it has caused. And that's something that you addressed, Marty, that comparing it to the budget situation. Is this just how politics are done now, where there's so much extremism and all of the focus is on winning and losing and not on actually coming to some principled resolution of the situation? And it's just so hard to find any reasonable rhetoric on it. I mean, from my perspective, you know, for those of you who have watched the show and heard me talk enough, you know that in most everything, I am, you know, a textbook moderate. I'm trying to be, you know, just so see the both sides of things. And, you know, I would never want to self-identify as an extreme person on either side of the spectrum. And so, you know, what Marty has said to me and to my ears seems to be perfectly principled, because I have people on both sides of the I have people with differing interests that I represent in all this. I've said this before. I represent content creators and even, you know, large companies who own content. I represent, you know, publishing companies, for example. I also represent startup innovators who have no money whatsoever. I don't mean to say that I'll represent somebody with absolutely no money, so don't, you know, setting that aside. So what am I saying? So, you know, I definitely see both sides of these things. I don't want the internet to break. I don't want the DNS to get all messed up so that, you know, nothing's going to happen. I don't want the Colbert report clips to appear on twit.tv and then twit.tv to disappear. I mean, that is, you know, I've used this term before. That is ham-fisted. That is completely overkill. But, you know, this is the perfect the perfect situation for the old metaphor of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Just because SOPA, as it's written, is a bit ham-fisted and could have extreme remedies doesn't mean that we let clients like Marty's just sit here in the U.S. and get ripped off by people in China. There's got to be something to do there. And I don't see an effective remedy in U.S. law as it reads now for the fact pattern that Marty is talking about, you know, short of you know, having some kind of order in place that constantly has to be updated and given attention to. That seems to be a real risk to legitimate business interests in the U.S. And it's not just the interests of the RIAA and the MPAA. And it's not just the risk of shutting down folks like Egyptian and Iranian bloggers. So what I am happy to see is what I hear from Marty to my ears to be a pretty moderate take on it. You know, I'm certainly that's what I'm hearing in all this. And you know, Marty, you're brave for it, but that's I think you're speaking some wisdom.
Well, I want to bring Carolyn into this discussion because she's had an interesting thing happen in conjunction with her own site that I think is particularly interesting to consider against the backdrop of talking about SOPA. Specifically, Carolyn, who is a lawyer for photographers and a photographer herself, was the subject of a DMCA takedown notice recently sent to GoDaddy, her ISP, and her site was pulled down as a result. And this was over one of your own pictures, Carolyn?
Yes, it's kind of confusing. And I was traveling at the time when I got the notice from GoDaddy that my site was being taken down. But I guess I get to be bitten by my own or I get a taste of my own medicine because what happened was, and I was a little suspicious when I saw the actual takedown notice when I got back to my hotel and I was able to log on and look at what was going on, that apparently my article that tells photographers how to use the DMCA takedown notice to battle copyright infringement was copied by a photographer who failed to change the URLs in my my sample demand letter. And so then sent it to GoDaddy. And so then GoDaddy did what it was supposed to do, I think, well, to some extent. I have a problem a little bit with what GoDaddy did. Because GoDaddy took down my entire website, not just the page that had the allegedly infringing image on it. So the entire site was taken down. Because I was able to look at the demand letter from the person who was claiming the infringement, I knew something was sort of fishy going on, that perhaps this had happened. So I tried to contact the guy who had done the DMCA takedown, and I called him. I found him on Facebook. I found his contact information. I found his business that he owns, and I sent emails and called him several times, and I believe it was on a Friday, so I was maybe had the disadvantage of the weekend, but he was on the West Coast, so same time frame as that I was working in. And so finally, Saturday, sort of midday, I got a call from him, and he apologized profusely, and I just replied to him to so please let GoDaddy know that it was a mistake. And he did. And I also, during that time, I prepared a counter notice to GoDaddy to tell him that that I was the legitimate owner of the copyrighted work. And they say it's a couple of days before they can put up a site once there's a counter notice.
Right. So I guess the reason I wanted to throw this into our SOPA discussion is under our existing copyright law, you found yourself in a situation where your entire site went down with no good reason or justification. and was unavailable for some time. And this was just a mistake. But now we're going to have tools available if this Stop Online Piracy Act or Protect IP or some combination thereof go through in their current forms, that's going to really ramp up the stakes in that kind of scenario. And I'm just wondering if that gives you pause.
Well, I certainly understand. And I was not happy, first of all, that GoDaddy took down my entire site rather than just limiting it to the image that was claimed to be an infringement. I also wasn't happy that in the counter notice I had to agree to jurisdiction in the state where the complainant was. While I'm happy to travel and my practice is nationwide and I travel all the time for our cases, I just didn't want to have to do that. I didn't feel it was right. And certainly with respect to copyright infringement cases, when we go after an infringer, we have to sue the infringer where we find the infringer. Well, this is when you prepare a counter notice with GoDaddy, you have to agree to jurisdiction in the complainant state. So that's a little contrary to copyright law. So I wasn't happy about that. And certainly I understand that with SOPA and with any law, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a warrant for somebody's arrest, which we've had for years and years and years. And of course, with case law, we've had to balance the equities that are present with a warrant. Was the warrant justified? Was it based on appropriate testimony or evidence given to the judge who signs the warrant, given to by the perhaps the police officer? That's the same sort of balance that we're going to have to find with SOPA. It's the same sort of balance we have to continually find with the DMCA takedown notices. So it's important to have these discussions, and I have to say that I think Marty's right. Let's just continue to fine tune the law, as with any law, to make sure that we don't violate people's rights. And as a photographer, as an attorney who represents photographers, I certainly am happy to have the DMCA takedown notice provision, because that's the only way a lot of my clients can fight copyright infringement. And whether I got bitten by that law, then I sort of think it's funny, frankly, that I got bitten by that law. I certainly didn't appreciate it, and I was glad it was a mistake and we got it rectified pretty quickly.
All right. Well, we're here with Carolyn Wright, the photo attorney, Marty Schwimmer of the Trademark Blog, and Evan Brown. We're going to resume our discussion in just a minute. But first, I'd like to thank our first sponsor for this episode of This Week in Law, and that is Ford Sync. Ford's Sync entertainment features enable you to access music and podcasts from most devices, including iPods, mobile phones, tablets, or flash drives. And with Sync with My Ford Touch, you can play videos or display photos from your digital cameras or your portable game devices when your vehicle's in park. It's all made possible through a versatile media hub, which supports a convenient variety of devices for your music and entertainment, such as wired connections from just about any device, USB ports, SD slots, and RCA jacks, or wireless access via Bluetooth from Bluetooth-enabled devices. You just connect up your devices and play. Once your device is connected, you can use Sync's voice activation feature to play what you want. You can do things like, say, play genre, rock, or play the Eagles, or play Hotel California. I don't know why I'm in an Eagles mode today. Also available is Sync with My Ford Touch HD Radio. This features iTunes tagging, which lets you tag a song you like on the radio, transfer that information onto your iPod, and then purchase the song directly from iTunes at a later time. Sync's versatile entertainment features are available in the 2012 Ford Focus, which you can learn more about in addition to the other technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at ford.com/technology. Thank you so much, Ford, for your support of This Week in Law. Carolyn, you've been writing some interesting stuff recently. You linked to something to do with kids in public, and particularly, you know, here we are coming up on the holiday season, a bunch of children going ice skating at Hyde Park in London. But Hyde Park didn't like so much that people were snapping photos of the kids there. You want to tell us what went on?
Well, sure. It was a photography group that that they were just practicing their photography, going to some place where it had a lot of action. Of course, they looked like professionals at that point with nicer cameras. And they were photographing some of the kids. And the parents noticed that their kids were being photographed by these photographers. And they complained to the management about what was going on. Of course, the management came over and said, "You don't have a permit to photograph, so please go away." I think it was 7 photographers. What's amazing is that there were other people, of course, taking pictures. You're in a publicly accessible area, and there were people taking lots of photographs with their iPhones or their Android phones or little pocket cameras. But it's when you think that this you see a professional photographer or somebody you look suspicious, I guess, that you complain about it and want the activity to stop. We know that in the United States, however, if kids are in public, then they can be photographed by anyone. As long as you're not trespassing, then you're allowed to do that. And an interesting case was that I reported on my blog several years ago was about a pedophile who was taking photographs of kids in public. The kids are fully clothed and just available in a park playing. And the pedophile was posting these images of these kids on the internet and saying, sort of justifying pedophilia as a way of life, an appropriate way of life. And of course, that raised a lot of concern. But it's certainly within the pedophile's First Amendment rights to do so. It's an interesting scenario, but it's one that happens. It's a concern that happens every day for photographers.
Hey, Marty, you tweeted a link to a stat. We were talking about, what was it, the fake Pew site, Evan? This sounds like something that might have...
Yeah, fake Pew Research.
Fake Pew Research. This claims to be a real estimate from an attorney, Chris Castle. Coming back to our SOPA topic, this under the DMCA, Chris Castle has estimated that dealing with DMCA takedown notices in 2011 has cost Google $500 million. And he did a blog post, Chris Castle here, that goes through how he arrives at that number. So assuming that he's got some credence there, I mean, it seems like a pretty decent estimate of what's involved in all of that red tape. How about that take on SOPA, that, you know, the just the business economic losses that it might entail if we're already dealing with this kind of burden under the DMCA, Marty?
The way he came up with that number is that he said that Google received 5 million DMCA requests in a year, and that he mm-hmm. predicted that Google has to expend $100 on each request. That sounds a little bit high, because I would imagine that they're uber, you know, automated on handling that. However, obviously, for a law firm or a private company to generate a DMCA notice, the $100 per instance is plausible. Mm-hmm. But I was sort of skeptical. I mean, you know, divide 5 million by 365. How much is going on? What is the cost to society, though, if there are 5 million copyright infringements per year? I don't know. But, you know, a lot of infringement is kind of de minimis and doesn't really justify a lawsuit. And I'm a big believer in expedited dispute resolution. In fact, I think that I've written an article in the Trademark Reporter that says notice and takedown should be extended to trademark. Now, if you mm-hmm. want to get someone to violently disagree with me, have Professor Eric Goldman, my friend, to come mm-hmm. on the show. And his view is DMCA is horrible. But when I wrote the article, I looked at the DMCA and I said, look, it mostly works. And I found 3 real problems with the DMCA, all of which occur in Caroline's fact pattern.
Right.
The problems with this are, I think that you need to either have a copyright registration or an application to file a DMCA. And if that person based the claim on Carolyn's own photo, clearly he would not have had a copyright registration or a pending application for that claim. Second, the DMCA takes the intermediary takes action before hearing from the other side. And that's a huge problem with it. And the last thing is, there's no teeth for a bad faith claim. Section 512F is a section of the DMCA that says, if the plaintiff brings a DMC notice in bad faith, then you have a cause of action against him. And I think Professor Goldman's the leading scholar on this point. He's reported on every case. And there's been maybe three cases in the past 12 years where anything, at least even inconvenient, happened to the plaintiff. So all three of those weaknesses, don't have to substantiate your claim. You get relief without going to a court, and there's very little downside to a mistaken thing. That occurs in Carolyn's case. But my reaction to that is, change the DMCA. Create a higher standard of pleading. They know no immediate relief is troubling. I mean, you know, if Harry Potter, the seventh part, was released, irreparable harm can occur if a bootleg of a movie is released. So that's the argument for immediate relief. But except in those exceptional situations, on the whole, maybe you should need to get the counter notice before you take the material down. And then also, if you bring it in bad faith, if you misuse this law, maybe there should be some kind of sanctions. Maybe you should have to post a bond that you lose. So, yeah. But the bottom line is, I think that notice and takedown is great. I think that you want these things between the parties to be resolved and not in expensive litigation.
Right. But just listening to you there, you know, you're sort of making me feel like, well, there are all these problems with the DMCA and we should fix them. There are all these problems with SOPA, and I'd rather just not have it enacted than try and fix it after the fact. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is that SOPA is a little bit more complex than merely notice and takedown. I am actually encouraging you to put the Wikipedia page about SOPA as a show notes, because I found that to be one of the more lucid conversations. So, for example, they talk about the problem with DNS filtering, and this is I'm absolutely not qualified to talk about this, but it refers to the Pakistani YouTube episode, which I had heard about before, and my dim recollection of what occurred was Pakistan was upset by material that was being posted to YouTube. So they put in some form of filtering on servers in Pakistan solely with the intent of blocking its access within Pakistan. And the way that the internet works, this had the unintended effect of knocking YouTube off the internet worldwide for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the author said, this is the sort of technology that SOPA is arguing for. So if that's, I mean, I can't evaluate that argument. I don't have the expertise, but I haven't heard any really reasoned analysis. Is this a correct claim? Obviously, if it's correct, we can't allow this.
Yes.
I don't agree, but so
we will definitely put that in the show notes, and I'm glad that the Wikipedia article is turning out to be a good resource, and it sounds like, from what you're saying, a balanced and non-extremist one. So we look forward to checking that out. I do
also,
anyway.
Yes? Professor Zittrain gave a TED Talk in 2009. Mm-hmm. That provides a really good discussion about the Pakistan YouTube issue. So if you just do a search for Zittrain YouTube Pakistan, it's the first result about that. Very very interesting about you know, how the internet could be broken.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to seeing him on Colbert too. I have missed that until now. Thanks for the heads up, Marty. We're going to be back with our tip and resource in just a second, but I want to thank our second sponsor for this episode of This Week in Law, and that is Netflix. And I got to tell you, Netflix during the holidays, there's nothing like it. It's been sort of constantly streaming in our house for the last couple of weeks, and it will stream you thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, saving you time, money, and hassle. And you have so many different ways of instantly accessing all those streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch them on your PC or Mac or your iPad. You can watch on your iPhone and some Android phones too. If you have a gaming console, you're taken care of there. Or you can watch right on your TV with a Roku box. Many DVD players have the software built in. So you are amply prepared to watch Netflix, which also works on the Kindle Fire just fine, as I've been discovering. So that's a nice option because you have Amazon Instant and the Kindle Fire making Netflix available too. And you can watch one movie on one device and then finish it up on a different one. I've been using that feature a lot too. And I love how they their menus are getting more and more intuitive and better. Their recently watched queue keeps track of everything you've been doing recently. And their genres are wonderful for putting you right into what you want to see when you want to see it. And their holiday section is just killer. There's great stuff there. And whichever way you want to access it, you can watch as many of those great offerings and TV shows anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime. So try it for 30 days for free by going to netflix.com/twit. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for your free trial. And we thank Netflix for their support of This Week in Law. We hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. So our tip of the week comes from Carolyn, and it relates to something we were talking about a moment ago, and that is photographing kids in public. Carolyn, you recently did a Slate podcast on that and set out the rules and parameters. I know this is something I come up against all the time. I'm sure lots of other people do too, where you're just at school or at a soccer game or what have you. Your kid is there, you're taking pictures of everyone, and then you want to share the photos around, and then you kind of run into that barrier of, oh, you know, what is everybody's comfort level with this? Can you sum things up for us quickly and give people a few touchstones to keep in mind?
Well, I just primarily is that you should honor the requests of other people. We don't need while we may have the certain right to post photographs of kids on the internet, I personally have some lawyer friends who I've photographed their kids, and they've asked me to not post their kids' photos on the internet. I honor it just because it's a friendship situation. While I know that I still have the legal right to do so, I'm going to refrain.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And, you know, I think you can wind up getting into all kinds of just uncomfortable situations with schools and friends and neighbors and everything else, apart from any liability and privacy violations, which might wind up attaching at some point as well. So it's good to know that here in the U.S., when things are in public, they can be photographed at will, but it's good to use good judgment about that too. Is that basically summing up your take on it, Carolyn?
It is.
All right. And our resource of the week goes to our discussion of the Stop Online Privacy Act. And that is coming up next week on December 7th at Stanford Law School for free. Is going to be a talk called What's Wrong with SOPA. If you're in Northern California and you want to get some really good perspectives on this debate, and I'm hoping that the perspectives are not from the extremist standpoints. We've got Mark Lemley in this, Fred Von Lohman, a really stellar panel of folks, Anthony Falzoni from the Fair Use Project at Stanford, are all weighing in at this event next week, What's Wrong with SOPA? And it's absolutely free at Stanford. So I'm hoping that they make it available online. But if you can go, that's even better. So that's our resource of the week. And that will be our show. Thank you so much for joining us on This Week in Law. Marty Schwimmer from the Trademark Blog and Leeson Ellis.
Thank you, Denise.
It's been a real pleasure. You can follow Marty at Trademark Blog on Twitter. He's also on Google Plus. Anything else you want to let people know about before we sign off?
This is more than enough. Just follow me at Trademark Blog. There you go.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot, Marty. And at Photo Attorney is our Carolyn Wright. Wonderful to have you back on the show.
Thanks. Good to be here. See you next time.
All right. We really enjoyed your perspectives and glad your site is back up and running.
Thanks.
And Evan, so much fun to have good discussions with you today.
Yes, I've enjoyed it as well. And, you know, there's been a disturbance in the force because, you know, once in a while I agree with Marty, and today is one of those days where I'm right on with him. So a lot of weirdness around here. We'll have to do something about that.
All right. Well, I rather than rock the boat, I'll just invite people to stay tuned with us or tune in with us on Fridays at 11 Pacific, 1900 UTC, which is when we record the show. You can find it on iTunes and YouTube and various MediaFly outlets afterwards. And, of course, also at twit.tv/twill. And do let me know what's on your mind between the shows. I'm Denise at twit.tv. You can find me on Twitter. I'm D Howell there and on Google Plus. And I love hearing from you and what you want us to talk about on This Week in Law, which we will do next time. And until then, we really thank you for tuning in and hope you are safe and careful and fair and balanced out there in your discussions about all the issues relating to the internet and law. Take care.